Hey guys, you're listening to the Blackjack Apprenticeship podcast from blackjackapprenticeship.com. This is Colin, and we are here with Loudon Often. Loudon writes for us and has played blackjack with us for years, played blackjack on his own, and has the reputation. At one point, he was the most feared card counter in Vegas.
I think it was most notorious.
Most notorious, okay.
That was a Griffin book.
That's what it said in the Griffin book. There we go. And he's also, as far as people I know, he's the winningest card counter that I've played blackjack with. I don't think I'm too far behind you, but
I don't want to let you get there.
At this point, I don't have too much hope that I'm going to catch up to you either. Anyway, we're here to talk about planning trips and how to have a successful blackjack trip, and what you need to not have a failed trip. At one point, Loudon was responsible for our team trip planning, right? which meant he'd played more blackjack than anyone, he'd traveled more than anyone, and he had a knack for having a plan B, plan C, whatever. So why don't you tell us a little bit about planning a successful trip?
Yeah, well, it's funny because my work history is that I'm a procrastinator and an avoider and all these other things. But when it came to blackjack and my blackjack career, there was something that triggered in me that I was so efficient and so like dutiful. And
yeah.
So the way that I worked, my work schedule was such that a trip for me meant, during the week, I was sort of stay-at-home dad while my wife was at work.
Yeah.
And then when the weekend came, it was my time to work. And I did that every other weekend. So essentially, I had 2 weekends a month that represented my whole month of work.
Yeah.
So for me, on a weekend, I wanted to get 20 hours of work in. To me, that represented 2 weeks of pay. So I hit the ground running. I tended to fly out on a Thursday night and fly home on a Sunday morning. And in between that, I would get 20 hours of play. And that sometimes included, driving great distances and all this stuff. But it was all about, getting cheap airfare. It was all about packing light. So you're not checking a bag, you're taking it carry-on, you can roll right off of the plane.
Yeah.
I would, have my car rented in advance, get the cheap deal, but you don't have to wait in line, and I would pick the companies that have the computer monitors there in the terminal, so I wouldn't have to wait in the line, just go up to the thing, print out my ticket, and I'll be on my way. So it was all about thinking about efficiency of time. And, what would get me in any... Because 20 minutes of extra play at the table represented a lot of money. It represented a lot of money for the team. It represented a lot of my income.
Totally.
So if I could save 20 minutes here or there, it was huge. So those were the kinds of things that I was...
Did you read that blog post by Richard Munchkin about what a trip looks like?
I don't think I have. Tell me
about
it.
Well, I saw this a few months ago, and I actually called him and told him, like, dude, that's like, there aren't a lot of people in the world that can relate, but it would strike home with you or me or, people that have done this for a living. But it was just talking about, most people think, as a professional gambler, that it looks like this, and I show up in my limousine and
right.
He said, this is what it actually looks like. And it's like, wake up at 3 a.m. to catch my red eye flight and show up. And, on the airplane, I'm brushing up on some numbers because I'm going to be playing a game I haven't played in a while. And,
right.
And, driving. Once I arrive, it's not a normal airport. It's in the middle of nowhere. And then I've got a 3-hour drive and I show up and it turns out they've got the games closed when I show up. And so then it's on to the next place. And, but anyway, it was just that I feel like for us, what you can completely relate to in this weird world of we considered full-time for our team to be 40 hours a month, not 40 hours a week, but that means 40 hours at the table.
Right.
And, so, you can understand the difference there.
Yeah. Well, and you know, people think that if you're a high stakes gambler, you're rolling, you're pimp style, you're, you know, flying first class and taking limos and all this stuff. And in the world of it's such an interesting world because it's feast or famine in the sense that it's only feast when the casino is paying for it.
Yeah.
And otherwise it's famine because as a card counter, you're a number cruncher. You're like, you know what an edge means, you know, about a very slight edge in your favor means. So, you know, why would you pay an extra $200 to fly, you know, to get some extra peanuts and a, you know, glass of wine when you could save $200, you know?
Yeah.
That's how a card counter thinks. So it's, you know, it's funny to travel with, you know, tens of thousands of dollars and be turning down the $29.99 motel for the $19.99 motel. So that's sort of the mindset that goes behind it.
I remember hearing one of the guys that ran the MIT team how he was notorious for only wanting to eat buffets because then you don't have to tip. And people, when they heard that, I remember some people being like, oh, I can't, what a cheapskate, I can't believe it. I'm like, I can totally relate where cocktail waitress comes by and I think, no, I don't even want to ask her for a water because I'm such a cheapskate. I don't want to pay the couple of bucks because I just got a drink 15 minutes ago. I don't want to spend another $2 this 15 minutes.
Well, and I was always buffet. Like they would say, you know, you want to comp for dinner. Do you want the steakhouse or the buffet? And I would always choose the buffet because the steakhouse would take time to get seated, time for the waiter to come. It's like all this luxurious waiting around time that I don't have time for.
Absolutely.
So buffet, I could be in and out in 10 minutes and slam home some, you know,
totally
fries and a steak or whatever it was and be back at the tables. Efficiency of time.
I had a system down at a, I don't want to say the name, but a place that I used to play at about 2 days a week for a couple of years. And they had an awesome fine dining, but it would take about 2 hours to eat there. So maybe once every couple months, my wife and I would go there and we'd usually bring, you know, some family with us or something to enjoy this experience. But it was a 2 hour ordeal. Well, when I'd go to play 2 days a week, I had a system down. I'd go play for about 4 hours and then I'd get my comp and they'd give me the same. I'd ask for a fine dining comp and they'd just write it for $100 or $200 or whatever.
Right.
But I wouldn't go to fine dining. I'd go to the deli and I'd get my $5 pizza. I would get the rest, you know, I couldn't even use the full $100, but I'd get $40, $50 worth of energy drinks and, and cases of water. And I'd fill them up, muffins, donuts, whatever that I'd bring home, stock the fridge, like I'd carry them to my car, stock the fridge, and come back and play another, you know, 3-4 hours. To me, it was like, I love having in the fridge waters and energy drinks and, you know, Starbucks frappuccinos and muffins and donuts for when friends come over. So why am I going to go spend 2 hours in the fine dining when I can spend 15 minutes, fill up the car and get back to work?
Oh yeah, man! Just the topic of breakfast on a trip was always it was an interesting one because it can be such a time killer. Like I always tried to find a way to avoid breakfast, and you know, either get the a lot of motels have the what they call a continental breakfast, which used to be pretty crappy, but these days sometimes it includes those little waffle irons and sometimes biscuits and gravy if you're in the South, and you know, plenty of like bananas and muffins, and it's perfect because it's 5 minutes. You grab it on your way out to the car and you're eating, you know, on your way to the casino, or you know figure out something else. But I always hated the idea of I'm hungry, I've checked out of my motel, I need to get all this food, go sit down at a restaurant and order at Denny's or whatever. I hated that. I always wanted to cut that corner. So it was all about cutting corners to get maximum time at the tables.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe a trip starts with, you know, cheap travel there, efficient travel, packing light, no checked bags, and easy access to rental car, whatever, hit the ground running,
Yeah.
But when I would go, I'd fly out on a Thursday night, and my goal for that night would be play until I cannot play anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd go till 3 or 4 in the morning, get a good 3 or 4 hours in what was essentially a half day. I mean, I'm flying at night and still getting 3 or 4 hours of play. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And that always put my trip on a good foot, because then, you know, the next 2 days, if I can get, you know, 8 hours each day, then I've hit my 20-hour mark.
So how would you know what your plan of attack was, Cassina? You know, would you just show up and say, oh, well, I'm going to, you know, Toledo, and they've got this casino there, so I'll play this casino 4 hours the first night and 8 hours a day the next 2 days, and
yeah. No. So it would be specific to the region. And so the first thing I would do would map out the casinos. And usually, because I'd be flying in on a Thursday night and have limited time, I'd want to hit the casino closest to the airport. But these things are all changing, because I would check the conditions on casinos, and if a casino was really heat sensitive or tended to flyer people, then that would be the last one on my list, because I don't mind getting flyered. I just want it to be the last one on my way out of town.
And just so, people have an idea, you know, a little bit of what we're talking about might be unique to kind of the limits we were playing. What were you betting on a trip?
I would, you know, a true one would be 2 hands of $500. And there
would a max bet be?
Max bet would be 2 by 2,000, sometimes 2 by 3,000.
Yeah. So with those limits, we were definitely dealing with, because I remember, you know, probably my first 6 months, we didn't break $100. Maybe two spots of $100. I think that was our max bet for our first six months, and that was, you know, full time, and it took me I don't know how many months before I got my first back off. It's a little bit different story when you're betting the kind of money we were betting when we had our, you know.
But I've done plenty of trips where, you know, there are a lot of regions where you don't see more than a $500 max. So I did plenty of trips where I was betting 2 by 500 as my max.
But definitely the point would be, you got to know what conditions to expect, what your options are, what the rules are going to be at the casinos you're going to,
what the reports are, what people have said, you know, this is my experience there, really recent experience is great, and what the drive times are, and how many casinos are in the region, and what's your plan B? You know, if you get flyered to the first 5 casinos, what are you going to do? Is your trip a ruin, or is there a backup plan? Can you drive 6 hours and hit another region?
And, you know, I remember the first year of our team, we had people going around the country, and we had no idea what to expect, especially Vegas, you know, because Ben and I had been on, probably we'd been on half a dozen trips to Vegas, but with the limits we were playing, we would just play the strip, or we'd pull an all-nighter in downtown or whatever. It was a whole different story when we had, you know, 10, 15, 20 people on the team, and people are on their 20th trip to Vegas, and they're right. You know, visiting Lucky Club, and trying to find out. I guess my point is that we started to know what shifts to play, what shifts not to play, and what casinos to completely avoid in a region. And we had our whole team website that was devoted to adding all the information. We started to put that on the Blackjack Apprenticeship forum more recently, because, you know, we're not, if people on our team are still playing full time, you know, we're okay with sharing that stuff at this point. But, you know, knowing what to expect, that was so huge. We had a lot more volatile trips that first year than, you know, years 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there are some trips where there was no plan B. It's this number of casinos, and if you run out, then you run out, and, you know, I ran out or whatever. There are, you know, even after 6 years of playing, there are regions that I've never played for one reason or another. Either travel was never cheap enough for me to make it, to call it worthwhile, or I'd heard bad reports and just didn't want to risk it because there was no plan B. And, you know, maybe people had gone and said, oh, this place is rotten. But I had the opposite experience too. I remember running into another card counter on our team in a region, a certain specific region, and he was on his way out, and I was way in, and he was like, "This place is horrible. It's rotten. Turn around. Go back. Uh-huh. There's nothing here for you."
Yeah.
And again, my defiant, uh-huh, "I'm going to prove myself" nature came up and reared its head, and I was like, "No, I'm going to make this place awesome just because you said it wasn't worth playing."
I remember that was New York Dave, right?
Yeah.
I remember you getting a phone call that, "What's going on here? You know, I'm here from New York, and then someone else is here from Seattle, and we're at the same..." Like, well, what are the odds?
Man, and that was a failed session, because I called him in his session at this casino that I'd showed up at, and he stepped off and talked to me on the phone, and we both talked for, you know, 15 minutes and sort of sorted out our immediate plan.
Yeah.
But then as soon as the phone call was done, we both got backed off. So they picked us off.
That's pretty funny.
But it turned out, you know, it was like I attacked the place that he said was unattackable and found a way to make it playable, which was fun to do. Because I feel like there's always a way to sort of duck the odds or duck the report,
yeah,
or to find the loopholes or the cracks.
Yeah.
And, you know, the interesting thing about reports, if you rely on reports, you know, there will be a casino that maybe for years it said, "This place is so much heat, avoid it." And the truth is that people are avoiding it because of that report. And if so, then I guarantee you that the
totally
that everything that they're reporting has slackened, because it's a moving target. These things are changing all the time. People are getting hired and fired. And, you know, if they're not seeing card counters, then they're going to stop looking for card counters in the same way. So
I have people that ask me through the site, you know, what should I expect here, or how do I play so I don't get backed off, or, you know, something like that. And I say the one thing that I know about casinos is that you can't know what to expect. That our team would go through multiple cycles of casinos where a casino is playable and then it's unplayable. And then one guy leaves the casino and it's better than it was even before. And now, you know, 2 years later, it's not very good. And, you know, we back off it for a while, but, you know, you just can't know really what to expect. That's why one of the things I liked to do was to go on trips where I would check out regions and have very low expectations. But then I just try places no one had ever been to, or places people had been to, and just try it with a different approach. And some of it, I don't want to get into too much specifics, but how I might try my bet spreads or things like that, and have low expectations. But man, if I find a place where I'm getting good play, I'm flying back there, you know, a couple weeks later, and I'm planning a longer trip. And, you know, just, you got to capitalize on those places that are gold mines.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. There are so many surprises, and even Vegas itself, I felt like I went through a season of thinking, okay, well, I'm washed up here, it's over, and then I started to sort of crack my own logic and realize that there are inroads to my own inroads, and there are ways to, you know, find new ways to beat games, and, you know, there's a lot of turnover in the industry.
Absolutely. Yeah, even the last time I was at Bellagio, I had a casino manager come down and ask if I was someone else that hadn't been on our team for like 4 or 5 years. But it's just funny, you know, how personnel changes, and a place that I've been backed off in Vegas 3 times before, I can have a great session at, you know. And people say, well, casinos, they back you off, you can't really count cards anymore. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Do you know how many casinos there are, and do you know how many hours I've played at casinos that backed me off, you know, 6 years ago, how much EV I've generated?
Yeah, and you have a lot of things in your advantage when you're going on a trip and going to a region. You have shift change, which means all the faces and eyes in the casino change. I would bring different looks,
master of disguise.
Well, it really wasn't, because I wasn't checking baggage, so I wasn't doing makeup and fake noses and things like that. Yeah. I was just putting on a different hat, make them think I'm a different sort of dude, right? Yeah. So if I was kind of a fratty dude before, and then I'm a golfer dad dude, yeah. I mean, it's just hard to connect those guys together. So that was the thing, is I would just sort of create a character type uh-huh. that would be unremarkable but unconnectable to the other character type.
And
I would have to do it packing really light. So, you know, it's about hats and glasses. And I would, on a trip, my thing that I would do is I would go with max facial hair and then sort of start to slowly shave it uh-huh. off in different ways as the trip went on. So it went from, you know, full beard to goatee to yucky mustache to, yeah. you know, clean shaven.
And that even became kind of a thing for our, we'd have these, and you can see it in the documentary, Holy Rollers, that we would do these once every 3 or 4 months. We'd have a team-wide retest. And people that have seen the documentary say, oh, well, they had to, you know, change up disguises to play these casinos. But for us, it was much more about, like, what's the most ridiculous disguise? Like, how do I outdo everyone else there? And it's pretty amazing that people that you work with, that you see all the time, that you can not even recognize them walking right past them if they're dressed in a way that's not what you're expecting.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like you're projecting this different energy. It's just,
yeah. It just shows, you know, a casino, they're, if they've, you know, seen you once before and you look a certain way, it's pretty, you know, amazing how differently you can come across if you just go with a different feel or different vibe.
Speaking of trips and trip planning, I want to tell one crazy story, which yeah. is, you know, in looking to cut corners, one time I was looking for a cheap flight and I was trying to get down into the Southwest. And the cheapest flight had me on a crazy layover in Las Vegas. And it just so happened, because it was the cheapest flight, and it was like, oh man, what am I going to do for, you know, 6 hours in Las Vegas? Well, wait a minute. Why don't, because this was at a time when I felt like I was pretty burned out in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So it was kind of perfect. I rented a car for like $12
yeah.
for like 4 or 5 hours. And I went around and hit all these places really hard, knowing that, dude, you know, do whatever yeah. you want to be, because I'm catching my flight down to the Southwest in a couple hours. And I thought that was a happy accident, because it yeah. gave me a really cheap flight, and it gave me another region to hit in the middle of my Southwest adventure. So
I remember another person on our team would plan their trips intentionally. They would fly, I think it was Southwest, would always go through Chicago, and they would intentionally plan their trips for these inconvenient, you know, 12-hour layovers in Chicago. Because they were saying, oh, well, I'm going to, you know, fly East Coast to West Coast for a trip, or West Coast to East Coast for a trip. But I'll get this cheap flight because it's got a 12-hour layover in Chicago, and that's just enough time to get, you know, 6-8 hours in Chicago. And it basically could combine a mini trip in the middle of their cross-country trip.
Right. And you tend to, with those, you tend to just go all out, because
absolutely.
Your time's limited anyway, so why not? Yeah, that's good. You know, we could also talk about driving trips. You've done several of those, but if you live in a place where there are casinos, you know, along the way from spot A to spot B,
yeah.
You know, we did plenty of those, driving all over a state, or, you know, driving from one state to another, flying to an airport and flying into one airport in one state and flying yep. out of another airport in another state and getting a one-way rental.
Absolutely.
Just hitting all the casinos along the way.
Yeah. For me, you know, I remember being 18 years old and driving, you know, two states away to college for the first time. And it was fun and exciting. And, you know, I don't care if I sleep in the car and, you know, eat fast food the whole way. That's an adventure. So the thought, you know, over the last 7-8 years of, you know what, I want to check out a bunch of these casinos that I've never been to and there's very limited reports on, or I've heard good things about, but I can't justify a trip to one place in the middle of, you know, one state. But if I string together all these casinos and, you know, visit some friends, family along the way, those have been, for me, some of the most fun trips, to string these places together. And then all my hopes aren't based on one, you know, little region or city.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What else do we need to talk about? Trip planning.
I think that about... we could probably, after we're done recording, think of 20 other valuable things. Do you have any closing?
Well, man, I remember, because the goal was always, you know, go as cheap as possible, but yeah, also, you know, preserve time at the tables. So I remember there were times when I would end up getting the more expensive room because somehow it would translate into, you know, an extra hour at the table if I didn't have to drive,
yeah,
you know, 30 or 40 minutes each way to get to the cheap motel. Then it's a guessing game of, like, you know, if I'm going to spend an hour round trip to get the $20 motel, shouldn't I just get the, you know, $50 on the reservation,
yeah,
motel and, you know,
get an extra 2 hours in?
Yeah, get an extra few hours in.
I guess I'm a little embarrassed to say the extremes of our cheapness, but for Ben and I, you know, one of the things that we would do is, you know, around 2-3 in the morning, we'd start calling hotels and say, well, what time can we check in for the next day? So, you know, like, oh, well, you know, people check out at 8 a.m. Say, well, can we check into a room at 8 a.m. and it'll be for, you know, the next,
right,
for the next day. So basically, then if
you get two nights of sleep,
exactly,
for the price of one.
So we'd find one of these places, you know, and we would play, and we'd, you know, stay at the casino, play until 8 a.m., drive straight there, go to sleep from 8 till 2, get up, eat breakfast or whatever, lunch, dinner, whatever, and go back to the casino and play until we're exhausted again, then get our second night for one night's stay at a hotel.
Oh, I do have a funny story. Unrelated. GPS. Don't trust GPS. My favorite story is that GPS has led me wrong a couple times where it's like, you're here at the casino and I'm in the middle of the open desert. The other one was a casino. I mapped it and everything, and GPS took me to a Kentucky Fried Chicken, and there was a big banner there that said, you know, our double down sandwich was
there,
whatever.
You go.
So I thought, that's, you know, I'm a card counter, not a gambler. So I didn't eat the double down sandwich, but it led me astray leaning on GPS. So it's like, you know, map it out ahead of time, especially these crazy off the grid casinos on the reservations.
That reminds me, you know, and this is one place I don't even mind mentioning, but I was driving, my wife and I, one time we flew from Seattle to Philadelphia. This was before there were casinos in Philadelphia. But we drove to Atlantic City, stayed there for like 4 days. I played casinos for 4 days, and then we drove back to Seattle. We spent like 2 weeks driving back and hit up casinos all along the way.
Wow.
Well, part of our plan was to camp in Yellowstone. So we're driving and we see a sign that says casino, and we're thinking, I'm sure doesn't have blackjack. And then we see another sign, and I think, okay, I just gotta ask. So I pull over to a gas station and say, hey, that casino sign, do they have blackjack there? She says, oh yeah, they do. And so I talk my wife into driving a half hour out of the way to this place.
We get there. I want to hear that conversation.
Well, whatever. She, I don't think she really cared, but we drive there, and it's like a gas station convenience store that says casino. And we go in there.
Nice.
We have to walk through slot machines, through a narrow hallway to get to the one pit of like four tables.
Oh.
And it's two ladies, a guy with a huge cowboy hat that doesn't speak English. And then there's one spot open at the table. It's $250 limits. And so I wait. I back count for a while. And I realize they're cutting off like less than a quarter deck on double deck.
Oh,
man. And the rules are terrible. But with that penetration, it's still worth playing. So I jump in. And the whole time I'm asking the pit, can you raise the limits? Can you raise it? And they raise it to $500. The guy with the cowboy hat next to me, he's betting $500 a hand.
What?
I'm going from one spot of $25 to three spots of $500. And there's a crowd of the employees that are on their break watching my wife. And I have my wife counting down like how many cards they're cutting off. And she's saying, there were only 12 cards left that round. There were 14 this round. There were 10 this round, you know.
Oh, man.
And so I play there for a couple hours, get some food, and I'm up about $7,000 or $8,000. And then I decide, well, that's good enough. So I go to the cashier's cage, and the guy says, "I'm sorry, but we don't have that much money." He said, "We have to go to our safe." And he said, "It's going to be a while." So I go back to the table, lose all the money back, lose an additional several thousand dollars, win it all back, get up about $8,000, and cash out. Well, the whole time, the people are saying to my wife, "Tell him you can tell him he has to stop. You can tell him he has to be done," you know. And she's saying, "Oh no, it's okay, it's okay. I don't care. Whatever." And we get our fried chicken to go.
Did they cut you a cashier's check or what was it?
No, they went to the safe and got more money.
To the safe,
yeah. And then they paid me out. We got our fried chicken and drove all the way to Yellowstone with one eye in the rearview mirror, trying to make sure that no one was following us. But after that, I know Ben went there. I've got a picture of him. The pit boss has a fly swatter in his pocket. And I remember a couple of people from our team hitting it because it was just the middle of absolutely, nowhere USA.
Yeah. Man, I'd love to hit all those.
There's still time.
I've had a couple of casinos cut me a check because they didn't have enough to pay me out.
That scares me out. Cool. Well, we got to stop this podcast episode of How to Plan a Successful Trip with Loudon Often. This is Colin from Blackjack Apprenticeship. And if you haven't checked out our other podcasts, feel free, blackjackapprenticeship.com. Just look under resources for podcasts. And thanks for listening.
Thanks.